I usually have problems doing my act, you know, because I know a lot of you white people never seen an Indian do stand-up comedy before, you know. Like, for so long, you probably thought that Indians never had a sense of humor, you know. We never thought you were too funny either. See some people back there putting their chairs in a circle. My name is Charlie Hill, Sagoli. I'm Oneida. I'm from Wisconsin. It's part of your coronation. My people are from Wisconsin. We used to be from New York, but we had a little real estate problem.
That was a clip of Charlie Hill from his appearance on the Richard Pryor Show, and I'm pretty sure our two guests have heard that clip many a time. We're going to talk about Charlie Hill and other native comedians with our two guests. One of our guests is Cliff Nesterhoff, best-selling author known for writing about comedy, and his new book is called We Had a Little Real Estate Problem, The Unheralded Story of Native Americans and Comedy. Cliff, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Great to have you with us. With us as well, Jessica Elm, a citizen of the Oneida Nation, descendant of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohicans, and a postdoctoral researcher in the Bloomberg School of Public Health Center for American Indian Health at Johns Hopkins University. And Jessica Elm, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you both with us. As we talk about, we had a little real estate problem with our two guests and talk about a bit of the history of Native comedians, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have a favorite comedian, a Native comedian that you want to talk about or somebody that you've heard. I'd love to hear from you, or maybe just a question about it. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Cliff, let's start with you. It's your second book on comedy. Why did you choose to focus on Native comedy for this one?
Well, after the success of my first book, which was a more general history of stand-up comedy, I had the opportunity to basically choose from a series of different book offers, and so I was very grateful for that. But a lot of the offers that I was being presented with were for books that didn't really interest me. They were mostly about the modern comedy boom, about, you know, people wanted me to write about podcasts, about Netflix, about things like that, and none of it seemed very appealing to me. But one of the things that I was aware of that I found quite interesting about this contemporary pre-pandemic comedy boom was the emergence of indigenous comedians both around Canada and the United States, over 100 indigenous performers doing sketch comedy, improv comedy, and stand-up comedy. And so I had proposed that as just a chapter in a different book proposal about modern comedy. And Simon and Schuster saw that proposal and they said, if you want to write an entire book about that, we'll give you a deal for that. And I thought that would be really a great thing to do, especially at the time. It was January 2018 and a lot of negativity in the world, a lot of negativity in the body politic. And I felt like maybe elevating some voices that are often marginalized in the body politic and in show business might be a worthy thing to do. So it was my own sort of pretentious, lofty ambition that caused the book.
Well, I really enjoyed the book, and I know a lot of people probably already have enjoyed it and will enjoy it once they get their hands on it. Jessica Elm, how did you get to welcome again? How did you get involved?
Yeah, thank you, Larry. It actually is a little bit of a representation of what happens in Indian country. It seems like we're all about 2 degrees separated. And so I know one of the comedians that was interviewed for the book, Jackie Kalea. So she introduced us.
Oh, very cool. Has comedy been an important part of your life?
Well, it has, but not in this sort of more academic sense. It kind of came out of nowhere because I usually study trauma, and resilience in tribal communities. That's my regular job in health. So this was a little bit different, except for the fact that, you know, one of the big takeaways from the book is that comedy is a form of coping and representation of resilience. So in that way, it came together for me. However, to say that, of course, I love comedy and, you know, Charlie Hill is from my tribe. So, you know, that's, it's complicated.
It's complicated. Well, just the Cliff, you write about the fact, the sort of the image that the average white American in this country has of the indigenous population as native population as being not very, or being, let's say, stern. All the photos you see, that's sort of, talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, the stereotypes that are ingrained in American culture go very, very deep. The dehumanization process of Native peoples has been going on since the inception of colonization, and our popular culture reflects that. So whether it was pulp novels or comic books or radio programs or silent films or talking films or television shows, right up into the present day with Adam Sandler movies on Netflix, stereotypes are the main way that non-natives, quote unquote, learn about native peoples. And so these stereotypes take great amounts of effort to undo. I mean, we're dealing with literally hundreds of years worth of stereotypes. And if you talk to any indigenous comedians, they'll tell you laughter is such a part of their lives. It's such a part of their culture. Joking is such a part. It doesn't matter which culture they're part of. You know, we're talking about hundreds of different Native nations, all which with their own sort of separate and individual qualities. And yet laughter and humor seems to be almost universal throughout all of them.
And yet it's never, has never, almost never portrayed that way.
Right.
And the history, going back to the history, I found it really interesting. You talk about the Buffalo Bill and the shows back that, so we got started on that a long time ago, I think. And the fact that the people who participated in those shows were the native people were often told that you can go to jail or you can participate in these programs.
Right. There was different motivations for different people who were involved in the Wild West shows of the late 1800s. You know, you have to frame it in the historical context. What was happening to the majority of indigenous peoples in the United States at the time was they were being rounded up by force and placed on reservations. So you were a prisoner, essentially. So for some people who participated in Wild West shows, even though they reinforced racist stereotypes and distorted history, for some people it was a escape from agency surveillance. It was an escape from the reservation. So in some cases you got paid and you got to travel, but at the same time you were still essentially subjugated and being forced to do things and to play out a narrative that was maybe against your own beliefs. So it was really sort of a double-edged thing. It was sort of a damned if you do and damned if you don't situation.
Jessica, how does it strike you when you see those kinds of images or think back to the history of all this?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, it's quite remarkable how beyond offensive some of those images were and the things that people created in the common narrative in the country. I think it's, it's changed over time, of course. And now we have more subtle forms of these types of images in contemporary times. So I was really happy to hear about some of how things have changed over time through the book. And how it was recognized that was part of the process of erasing our story is to create these like mascots or other imagery that is dehumanizing. So So I'm grateful that this is another way to reach people, to be able to let them know, how those things happened.
Well, we have some other clips that we're going to play later on in the show. A couple of clips, I think one from Larry Omaha and a younger guy, Jim Rule. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's Wisconsin. You should be. Cliff is for sure. We'll hear from him as well. But we are going to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. By the way, you can join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Our two guests today, Jessica Elm and Cliff Nesterhoff. Cliff's new book is called We Had a Little Real Estate Problem, The Unheralded Story of Native Americans and Comedy, an eye-opener for me and really interesting read. We'll be back with them, and you'll be able to ask your questions coming up right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We are talking about Native comedy on the show right now. Our guest, Cliff Nesterhoff, a best-selling author known for his writing about and knowledge of comedy. His new book is We Had a Little Real Estate Problem, The Unheralded Story of Native Americans and Comedy. And with him is Jessica Elm, a citizen of the United Nation, postdoctoral researcher in the Bloomberg School of Public Health Center for American Indian Health at Johns Hopkins University. Are you familiar with Native comedians? Do you have a favorite? Join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. And we have Susie online from New Berlin. But before we go to Susie, I want to get back to Jessica and Cliff. You kind of, well, Cliff, let me go to you first. You sought out some help for the writing of your book?
Well, I'm non-Native. I don't even know if we mentioned that off the top. But it does need to be noted that I'm not Native. And so it's a very delicate thing. There's a lot of stigma and a lot of history related to non-Natives writing about Native peoples and getting things wrong. So I absolutely did not want to find myself in that situation. So that was one of the reasons I connected and coordinated with Jessica, who is really on top of all of that, other than the fact that she's Oneida, but just her body of work speaks to respectful and informed portrayals of Indigenous peoples and different cultures. So I really needed her assistance in going over this manuscript together throughout the writing process to make sure I was getting things done correctly.
Jessica, how was that process for you?
Oh, it actually was quite quite emotional for me at some points. The history alone, if I'm sure you've read it, but some of the descriptions are things I hadn't really read in that type of way before. And then having the nuances of not just Oneida people, but, we have our relatives that are Haudenosaunee, or sometimes people used to call us Iroquois. Mohawks are included in that. And so there's Mohawks in the book. And one of my conclusions really was from the book was that my people are from the most funniest Indian group in the world. So that was my big takeaway. So ups and downs. Yeah, for sure.
Ups and downs for sure. Well, Susie in New Berlin, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for having this program, Larry. I had heard Cliff on a couple of other programs on NPR already, and I'm glad that there's a call in, and I hope that more Native Americans and non-Indigenous people call in. But I had so many things that I thought of, I almost didn't call in either. I'm really, really glad to hear that somebody is finally talking about this. And I'm glad to hear that somebody who specializes in working with people with trauma is working with somebody who specializes in working with people with comedy. Because I think that they're so tied together, and I think it's one of the ways that Native Americans have survived all of this time, you know, a way of handling it. So I'm really, really glad to hear about this. There's just so many other things that I've thought of along the way. I can't wait to read this book. So.
Oh, and you're an Oneida Nation member, are you not, Susan?
Yes, I am. I am. I'm in Milwaukee. My grandmother migrated here to Milwaukee from Oneida after she was sent away to school. She moved to Milwaukee. So,
well, I thank you very much for calling. Let's get some comments from both Cliff and Jessica. Cliff, a comment from you?
Well, I'm delighted to hear that she's excited about the book. You know, not to sound too flippant about it, but when this book was getting ready to come out, my greatest concern and my greatest hope was that it would please a indigenous readership. And of course, everybody's different, so you can't please everybody. But so far, it sounds like everybody's been pretty supportive about this project. Of course, I want everybody to enjoy this book, to be appreciative of the book, to learn from the book, whether you're Native or otherwise. But really, during the writing process, in the back of my mind, I really wanted to please the indigenous reader. That's really who it was written with that in mind. A lot of it is written to educate the non-Native reader. There's going to be a lot in the book that I'm sure most Native peoples are familiar with and most non-Native peoples are unfamiliar with simply because of the way we've been educated or miseducated or by the way things have been left out of the history books. I'm trying to make up for a lot of that in this book, but also I want to underscore, so that we don't forget, it is a book about comedy. So there is lots of heavy issues in there, but really it's a book that, even though it deals with heavy issues, it is about the comedy aspect and the comedy experience. It is full of laughter and joy. It is not nearly,
It is indeed. Jessica, any thoughts on Susie's remarks?
Yes. Well, first, I'm just thrilled that another Oneida is on here with us. So that's great. We're probably cousins in some way. And so thank you. And yes, I agree with Cliff. I've been kind of going down this road with my own lens, of course. So to kind of flip that on its head, it's again, to repeat sort of what has been said in different ways, that comedy really is like the way that we got through trauma and moved through it and still is a huge part of our culture. I mean, I would say that's on the top few things that makes us Oneida and other Native people.
Okay. Well, Susie, I thank you very much for calling. You can join in too. The number to call 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. Let's go back to Charlie Hill. For a minute, and Cliff, Charlie was kind of like the person, probably the most well-known Native comedian current times, at least.
Yeah, well, Charlie Hill really was the first modern Native American stand-up comedian. He was a regular at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, starting in early 1975. He started doing stand-up comedy maybe 1 month before a guy named David Letterman, who had just arrived from Indianapolis. They bonded immediately. You know, they both had a Midwestern sensibility. They were both around the same age. They both had huge aspirations. Their ultimate goal for both of them was to wind up on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show, which, of course, eventually they both did. And for both of them, it really made their careers. The Johnny Carson Tonight Show made David Letterman David Letterman, and it also really made Charlie Hill one of the prominent comedians of what would become the 1980s comedy boom. And Charlie was was really taken under the wing of some major people. In 1977, he had his television debut on the Richard Pryor Show. It was Richard Pryor himself who booked Charlie on that program. 15 million people saw Charlie Hill's primetime television debut, the very first time that an Indigenous comedian appeared on network television. And in doing so, he would go on, whether he realized it or not, to inspire a whole new generation of Native kids who then saw comedy for the first time as an opportunity that they too could get involved in. So Charlie Hill was a huge influence on a lot of young Native comedians, and he really is still the guy that people reference today.
Yeah. I was even thinking back further back from Charlie Hill, Will Rogers. I bet there are a lot of people that who know the name Will Rogers and certainly know who he was, don't know that he was a Native American.
Right, right. Yeah. Will Rogers' backstory was sort of rewritten, or at least treated the same way George Washington used to be treated. Once upon a time, we'd hear about George Washington. The only thing we'd ever hear is when he was a kid, he chopped down a cherry tree and said, "I cannot tell a lie." Well, with Will Rogers, it was sort of the same thing. We just hear, "Oh, he never met a man he didn't like." Well, what does that even mean, for one thing? And who is this guy? The way he's been sold to us is as this simple homespun American, the all-American cowboy. Seldom mentioned that he identified as Cherokee, that he was Native American, that he was not a white guy pretending to be 1/16th Cherokee, but was a legitimate enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation. His entire family tree was Cherokee. He grew up, he was born in 1879. He grew up in what then was called Indian Territory, eventually became Oklahoma. He was surrounded by survivors, elders, survivors of the Trail of Tears. So his entire ethos about political comedy and political commentary was informed by his background, informed by his family tree. And his Cherokee roots cannot be dismissed as just a piece of trivia. It really is what informed his entire career as a political comedian. So Will Rogers, it's so strange. We do still know the name. There's highways, hospitals, parks named after Will Rogers. And yet, the one detail you think would be mentioned first and foremost is often obscured, the fact that he was a Native American.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what about the, let's talk about some of the current Native comedians who are on the scene and you wrote about in your book. I want to give Jim Rule a chance here. We've got a short clip of Jim Rule. He's a Stanford grad and a Wisconsin guy. So, yeah. So I wanted to get that Wisconsin tie in there. So, Tyler, have you got Jim Rule up for us? Let's hear a very short thing.
I'm my tribe is Chippewa, or Ojibwe is actually, it's more well known as Chippewa, but it's actually Ojibwe. And my reservation's up in Michigan. I grew up in a pretty big family. I have one brother and five sisters. You know, when we get together around the table, we made us all laugh a lot at, like, dinner table. My older brother, like, 6 years, so I just worshipped him. And one time he told me to come in the house and tell my parents that he'd been hit by a car and he was going to lay in the street. And I did it because I'm an idiot. My parents are mixed. My mom is Native. My dad is white. He doesn't even know what tribe I am, to be honest with you. He's like, "Oh, I think you're the Chippendales?" No, Chippewa, Dad, Chippewa. And it is a big deal that we don't really get our voice out in the media. You know, you don't hear us talking. We don't get interviewed. We have no big name stars that people have any idea of, like, individual personalities. You know, and Graham Greene and Adam Beach, nobody really knows anything about them. You know, there's one Native guy on the PGA Tour, Nota Begay. Again, nobody knows anything about them outside our community. Either one is problematic. Native American just could mean you were born here. You know, really, that's what the term Native means, you were born. And same thing with Indians. Obviously, there's us and no one's over in India. So I like Indian almost better just because there's less syllables and I'm lazy.
Jim Rule. And you've heard him, Cliff?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Jim Rule is in the book. We met a few years ago while I was researching it. And he toured with something called the Pow Wow Comedy Jam, which in the late 2000s, around 2009, I think, there was a special on Showtime that Charlie Hill hosted. It was the first all-Native comedy special in the United States, and you can still find that streaming online, and it's worth checking out. It's also interesting because it's sort of a transitional period between pre-podcast Netflix boom and sort of post-Charlie Hill being the only guy. It was the first time that that many Native comedians had been assembled in one place, because up to that point, the numbers had been so few. There had been so few Indigenous comedians performing. But today, like I said at the start of the show, there's over 100 Native stand-up, improv, and sketch performers and comic actors, far more than most people realize. So there's a real renaissance happening right now, not just of Indigenous comedy, but of just a new generation of Indigenous artists. It's a very exciting time, I think, for a lot of new art coming out of various Native nations.
The 1491s. Talk about the 1491s.
The 1491s are one of the most popular of the Indigenous comedians that have emerged in the past few years. It's a five-man sketch troupe. They are very popular online. They have a series of YouTube videos. I encourage everybody to go to the 1491s website. They rue the day that they named themselves the 1491s, because whenever anybody references them, they call them the 1862s, the 1941s. But it's the 1491s, a reference to the year before Columbus arrived, the 1491s. And they recently did a huge production at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival called Between Two Knees, which was a sketch comedy epic. It was absolutely hilarious. And speaking to the idea of addressing trauma through comedy, it was a telling of Native American history from a Wounded Knee 1890 until the siege at Wounded Knee 1973, hence the name Between Two Knees, and covered the bleakest subject matter you could imagine, from residential schools to genocide to termination to relocation, and yet used this joke-driven narrative that I had compared to Mel Brooks's History of the World Part One, in which it's just dealing with the saddest and most hardcore of topics, but just in a hilarious manner. Joke, 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 joke. One of those things where you laugh and learn, one of those types of dynamics. And hopefully that's what my book is as well, in a sense, where, yes, we address some very bleak topics, but at the same time, illuminate with some great comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting to me, Johnny Roberts. You open your book with Johnny Roberts, and I'm thinking he, this family and everything, and he would drive 5 hours
mm-hmm.
just to get a gig.
Yeah, he lives in Red Lake Nation. It's a 5-hour drive to get to Minneapolis, where most of the open mics are, and a 5-hour drive back. And he has a full house full of kids. I think he has 10 young children and 2 grown children. And he just loves comedy, and his wife supports his efforts. And so he goes out of his way to do stand-up at these open mics. But, you know, that's one of the themes through the book is the difficulty for those who are living in rural areas or more isolated areas to connect with other people. And if you have career ambitions, it can be really difficult if you're not, in an urban area. So he has not as advanced as far as some of his contemporaries, simply because he can't get as much stage time as some of the other comedians who are featured in the book who live in New York City or who live in Los Angeles. So, it speaks to his passion for comedy, the fact that he does go out of his way on a regular basis, 5-hour drive there, 5-hour drive back.
What do you think, Jessica, why do you think somebody would drive? I mean, what motivates the Native comedian today, do you think?
Well, I thought about him just needing a break from the kids. I'd rather sit in the car for 5 hours, get a break. So that's my first thought. I mean, but clearly he's a driven person, you know, and he's following his dreams and passions and gets connection to other people when he, in a different kind of way, when he's able to perform. So Yeah, and I think it's just a great another great example of the resilience that it takes to be able to do what you want to do.
So have you ever done stand-up comedy, Jessica?
Oh, no. No. I'm just a researcher.
Oh, man. Cliff, you've done a little stand-up, haven't you? Or you did in your past somewhere?
Oh, yeah. Before comedy was popular, I quit at the wrong time. My stand-up career started on October 3rd, 1998. I remember my first gig was in a town called Ajax, Ontario, like the foaming cleanser. And I remember I did 1 minute of material. I was so underprepared. Usually new comedians go up and they have no sense of time and they just never get off the stage. I was the opposite. I wrote 4 jokes. The first joke got a laugh. Second joke got half a laugh. Third joke got nothing. Fourth joke got nothing. I said goodnight after 1 minute. The stage was empty. The MC was in the bathroom still. And the audience was just staring at an empty stage. But I quit stand-up in 2006. And then focused more on writing, which was ultimately more lucrative.
Well, I think I love that whole scene, that era with comedy clubs, and you're writing about that era was really fascinating to me, and the comedy store,
yeah,
and the people, you know, the stories that you have in the book around the comedy store are absolutely amazing. I was thinking about somebody who said when he went there, he was the owner. She told him, well, you can go third. Well, he thought, oh, that's great. And then he winds up at like 3 a.m. or 2:30 a.m. because the regulars would come in. And if a regular came in, they just got to go up on stage.
Right. The regulars were well-known names like Richard Pryor and Red Fox. So if you're just a who's it amateur who's arrived from the Midwest, you know, you're going to get bumped. Yeah, that story was specifically about Larry Omaha and his first arrival at the comedy store. Yeah, going up at 3 a.m. Again, it's like John Roberts driving 5 hours. You really got to make those sacrifices if you want to do it. And a lot of the time you're performing for like 2 people, 3 people, and they're pretty apathetic or ambivalent. But those are the hard knocks that you go through to learn how to get better.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I'm telling you, it was really fun reading your book. I learned so much in the book, but I had a lot of good laughs too. I mean, you write about a lot of really good native comedians, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I want to thank you both for taking time to be with us today. It was fun talking with you, and I hope we get a chance to do this again. Thank you. Very much.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
So, 2 guests for you today. It was really a lot of fun talking with Cliff Nesteroff and Jessica Elm. Cliff's new book is We Had a Little Real Estate Problem, The Unheralded Story of Native Americans and Comedy. I can highly recommend it to you. I think you're going to enjoy it. And I thank them for listening, for being with us. And I thank you for listening. And I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.